too. We have received apology from the DG. Will not be able to attend the meeting. He has got the emergency family matter. We have received the apology from Honorable Stain. He's running late. Honorable Chweu attending constituency work. Honorable Mandela not well, he's off sick. And then Honorable Kruger, the wife is in ICU, so will not be able to attend. And we'll put her in our prayers that he recover, so that Honorable Kruger can come to the meeting. Today's agenda, we are going to receive the the report on the work, the third quarter performance and expenditure report by the department. Mr. Kobok, you're welcome. I can see you are next to the laptop. We must increase the pace. We don't have all day meeting. The agenda is longer, so if you can be fast as you present. You have only 15 minutes to present so that we can have much time for discussion. You're welcome. If DM wants to introduce the report, DM, you're welcome to.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, colleagues, ladies and gentlemen. The Q3 2017 report is being presented here today. As you see that what we are reporting is a 79% achievements of the targets of that period. So Mr. Hoboke and the team will be making a presentation. Thank you so much. Bye.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, my colleagues.
I'm told there is a problem with the screen. Members must use their documents, so the presenter must indicate to members which document you are and slide numbers.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. You solved the problem before I reported it. we are looking at quarter three validated organizational performance for 2017-18. Chair, if we go to slide two, that is just the presentation outline. Slide three, that is how we are structured as a department. Slide four is a very important slide. The PC insisted that every time we present, we should reflect on how we are performing against the MTSF targets. And that is how it looks in terms of those targets. Those targets would also be found in the NDP. Slide five That is the summary of the performance by the department. SDM was saying the department achieved 79%. And just very briefly to explain that 0%, it is simply because this format of reporting is prescribed, and therefore the zero had to be there. But de facto, that work has been done, which belongs to the office of the Chief Financial Officer. The decision was to incorporate it in the comprehensive producer development support policy, and it is, as we speak, part of that policy. Chair, if we go to slide six is a reflection on what has not been achieved, and I'll focus more on what has not been achieved and the reasons. But we have also gone to an extent of indicating that the milestone that was not achieved is linked to a particular target in the approved APP of 2017-18. So we went out to reflect on that APP target so that we give what has not been achieved, what has been achieved, a context in line with the APP. So because slide six, Chair, reflects on what has been achieved, I will not waste time there. Slide seven. I have already explained this, Chair, to indicate that the draft integrated development finance policy is at a very, very advanced stage, and I've indicated that within this policy we incorporated the target which belonged to the chief financial officer. but we are indicating it there as not achieved to say draft integrated development finance policy not submitted to MINMEC. And Chair, these are some of the things which we refer to as dependencies. You know, certain milestones will be achieved based on certain meetings taking place. And if the meeting doesn't take place, then the target gets delayed, and that's the reason that is given there, which I've already touched on. Slide eight, 100% submission of 2017 biannual assessments. We indicated here, Chair, that only 74%. First biannual assessment for employees, and a total of 65%. So it wasn't 100%. The reason for this, as indicated, is because there are those employees that are ineligible for assessments due to temporary incapacity leave, maternity leave, and suspensions. That's basically the reason why. Chair, I will not go to slide 9 and 10, 11. I'll go to slide 12. What has not been achieved in terms of that target in the APP is that data analysis for the two animal improvement schemes monitored was conducted and reported. This milestone was not achieved during quarter three. And the reason for that was verification of supporting documents on World Poultry Foundation training and advisory workshops were not completed. Chair, I have indicated that some of these, because we are focusing on quota 3, if we go to quota 4 performance, you will discover that these milestones have been achieved. So I will not go on slide 13 because 13 is just achievements. Slide 14 is also achievements. Slide 15, Chair. The target is in the APP quarterly review report on national food and nutrition security interventions. And then this was not achieved. And the reason for that was because validation process was still ongoing. At the time when we were dealing with this validation was still being conducted. Chair, I'll go to slide 17. And I will look at consolidated inputs from the public as the target in the APP. What was not achieved? Draft Agri-BEE enforcement regulations document was presented to EXCO on the 27th November. However, input from the public was not done. The reasons for non-achievement, EXCO recommended that all affected stakeholders must be taken through the document in the form of a workshop. Because of the recommendation of EXCO, this was regarded as not achieved. But as I talk now, this I know for sure that this has been achieved. Program 5, Chair, slide 19. The target is 850 hectares planted in temporary unplanted. What was not achieved, 247.6 hectares were planted in the Eastern Cape, and that number KwaZulu-Natal and Limpopo regions, that number. There was a deviation of negative 602.34, and that deviation was due to expenditure carried over from 2016-17 financial year, which reduced the 2017-18 budget and negatively affecting the attainment of the 2017-18 target. The next one, Chair, is that what was not achieved, the department has received letters of concern from Lamote Empowerment Trust and Kleekskraal Community Empowerment Trust adopting their existing trust for recommissioning. That community has amended its constitution to make provision for the recommissioning. Lamote communities will not adopt a new constitution because they already have the existing constitution, which was adopted when their trusts were formed. Both communities will use their existing constitution for recommissioning. The Lebanon community will not be able to proceed with its existing entity due to it not being suitable for recommissioning purpose. Slide 20, Chair, as I move fast, what was not achieved there is the plan and supporting documents which were submitted to MANCO for further deliberation and recommendations. The reasons for non-achievement is because these documents, instead of serving there, were referred to the Departmental Executive Committee for approval, so they did not serve at MANCO per se. Program 6, Chair, slide 21, setting up of core management forums is the target in the APP, and this was not achieved. Setting up of core management structures is dependent on the allocation of small-scale fishing rights, which has not occurred. So that allocation impacted on this. Chair, I will now go to challenges affecting achievement. Like we said previously, slide 23, finalization delays within specific time frames The example I have given is when a meeting like MINMEC has to sit and did not sit, then a lot of milestones will be affected, because those things will not be able to be considered by such meeting. That is what we mean by finalization delays within specific time frames. Chair, I'm going to request that I take that section as read, because the middle column indicates the targets affected and then the progress. In other words, what is it that we have done? Because that was the challenge, that was the cause, and what is it that we have done? But suffice to summarize and say, Chair, that most of these non-achieved milestones, because we are considering quota 3 now, if we consider quota 4, we'll discover that they have already been achieved. So, Chair, the next one is the DAF expenditure per economic classification. And, Chair, with your permission, I will request the CFO just to run through those slides very, very quickly. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, DM. Thank you, honorable members and colleagues. I'm on slide 27. We had a budget of 6.8 billion. At the time, it was at 6.1 our expenditure, and also included there its earmark funds. Under goods and services, for those earmark funds, we had money for agricultural census of 90 million. Under that, 133 million. And then moving to slide 29, we are looking at program one as a whole, and we are saying the budget was at 906, and the allocation of the budget for targets was at 107 million, which account for 12%. And then in terms of actual for the whole year, For the targets, it was 92 million out of an amount of 647 million. Then I move to program two. Program two, the budget was 2.2 billion, and then allocated for the targets was 909 million, and the actual expenditure for the targets was at 620 million. Out of an actual expenditure of 1.7. Then move to program three. The total budget was 1.9 billion. 951 of that was for targets, and actual expenditure for targets, slide 32, sorry, 32. I was saying the total budget for program three, it's 1.9 billion, and for targets it's 951 million, and then the actual expenditure related to that particular target, to those particular targets, was 570 million out of 1.3 billion actual expenditure. Then I move to slide 34. The total budget, it's 261 million, and then the total for target of the budget is 136 million, and the expenditure for up to date, it was 123 million out of the 235 for the total program. Then we go to slide 35. The total budget was 1.0 billion, and for targets it was 275 million, and then the expenditure relating to targets was at 163, and the total expenditure for that particular program was at 787. Then I go to program 6. The total budget was at 481 million, and for targets it was 245 million. And then in terms of the expenditure, I would see that it was at 259 for targets out of the whole actual expenditure of 427. Then if we look at the whole of DAF, the total for targets in terms of budget was 2.6 billion out of the 6.8 billion. And the expenditure for the three quarters was at 1.8 billion for targets, and the total expenditure for the whole of DAF was at 5.2 billion. And then, if I can get permission from the chair and the DM, I just want to deviate a bit and just ask for indulgence from the portfolio committee. We want to appeal to the portfolio committee to assist the department around the issue of compensation of employees or employment. We are focusing, as of the end of May, we are focusing that we might have a shortfall of 68 million. And that 68 million takes into account the issue of the salary increase of 7% that has come through, and also it also takes into account a leave gratuity that needs to be paid, and there's issue of overtime. So we are just making a passionate plea to the portfolio committee if it can also assist in terms of canvassing for the department for additional funds, especially around the compensation of employees. Then I want to move to slide 38. Slide 38 talks about just 38 and 39 talks about the third quarter on its own in terms of the budget and actual. And then we also give on slide 40 the reasons why we have the variations. And then slide 41 talks around the three quarters, comparing the budget for quarter one against the actual, the same with quarter two and quarter three. I would like to hand over to Dr. Hovuke. Thank you.
Thank you, CFO. The next slide is slide 43, highly pathogenic avian influenza in South Africa. This area of work is dealt with by Program 2, Food Production, Health and Food Safety. Now, what is important for honorable members is to know that the outbreaks in South Africa is as follows. The total number of outbreaks detected and reported to date as of 15th February 2018, 140 locations tested positive to the outbreak. 8 outbreaks in backyard chickens, 30 outbreaks on commercial chicken farms, 20 outbreaks in birds kept as a hobby and zoos, 44 outbreaks on commercial ostrich farms, and 38 outbreaks in wild birds. And the next slide, 45, is the breakdown of outbreaks per province, and that is how it looks like, honorable members. The next slide, which 46, is where these outbreaks are in terms of our map, in terms of South Africa, the physical locations, the same as slide 47. Now, because of these outbreaks of pests and diseases, if you look at slide 48, those are the bans placed on South Africa. And the first column there is the country which has placed a ban on South Africa, the date when that was instituted, and the commodities which are not allowed, which have been banned. And it's not a very glossy picture. Thank you. Then the next slide, Chair, vaccination. At the moment, South Africa does not allow for the vaccination against avian influenza. The decision on vaccination has been done through broad consultation and by taking all the available scientific information into account. Vaccination does not prevent infection. It merely reduces the clinical signs of the disease and shedding of the virus. Due to the high possibility that vaccination will mask infection with avian influenza, most trade partners will not accept poultry meat or products from a country that vaccinates against it. Consultation between DAF and industry continues to formulate a position on vaccination. This one is regarding the bill, Chair, Preservation and Development of Agricultural Land Bill. I think what is important here, Chair, is to make members aware that the process around this has been quite slow and worrisome, but I think a solution was found because an external service provider was found and was appointed to fast-track this work, and this service provider is accompanied by a technical task team. So they are working together to fast-track this bill, and we are hoping for more milestones now in terms of this bill. The next slide, 51, is the gun chart, which is simply showing how, you know, and when and what, you know, in terms of the activities around this bill. And that's it, Chair. That's the acronyms. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members.
Thank you very much. At least you have done it before 15 minutes. Well done. Honorable members, that was the third quarter report, performance and expenditure report. Before I allow members to go into questions, the chairperson is here. The audit metric of the department, how far are you?
Thank you, Chair. I will request the CFO to...
Talking to the Chair. The Chair is there.
Oh, okay. Chair, thank you. Chair, this report has been subjected to a review by both the monitoring and evaluation unit of the department as well as the internal audit unit of the department. The report has also been tabled to us as the audit committee, and so hence it is titled the validated audit report, performance report. In addition, Chair, the process is underway to attend to the findings of the Auditor General for the previous financial year,
and we're happy that management is giving attention to those and included in the report snippets of the progress attained in dealing with the matters that were raised by the AG. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. You know, the way you have summarized your report, if Auditor General comes here at the end of the year and give a different story, we're going to have a problem with yourself. Because we expect a report that these are the findings, this is how they've been handled, and those that have not handled, why. So you just summarize, and last year it is the same, you remember? And they are still, the findings were still the same. You remember, Chair?
I could say a little bit more, Chair. I wasn't sure you, I've got...
No, you have time. Give us the report.
Yeah. Chair, there are three, you could divide the areas of challenges into basically three. And I will focus on the root causes and begin to identify what those root causes, what are the implications of those root causes. One area relates to resource allocation, which the department is facing. Now, the impact of that is on M&E, on monitoring and evaluation. The issues of resource have a direct implication on the department's ability to follow the money. As the committee would know, the bulk of our budget is allocated to provinces and our entities through transfers. Now and then, Chair, we experience incidents at the level of where the money has been allocated, which we must account as a department. And in many instances, we would not have been able to institute an adequate system to follow the money through to the point of disbursement. So that remains an issue, an area of concern by the audit committee. Our reports from the internal audit as well as from the external audit now and then would pick up on shortcomings in the area of monitoring and evaluation. The other area of concern, Chair, is the ICT area. In the department, Chair, only about 14% of critical value chain processes are automated. The implications of that are such that an exceeding amount of human effort is required to effectively implement internal controls, such that there is comfort provided to us at governance level that all actions carried by the department are carried in an environment that protects the assets of the department. So the shortcomings, the lack of investment in ICT inherently creates a risk for the department, which we are uncomfortable with. Again, I link this back to the resource allocation matter. The third area, Chair, is the risk management. A number of our reports highlight significant risks, for example, in the area of border control, particularly impacting adversely on both animal and plant health, which exposes the country to huge risks which have got adverse impact on the economy of the country. I think the DG reported earlier on about a number of outbreaks that the department experienced. We believe that there is a strong link between those risks as well as the outbreaks that would happen in the country. Chair, the other area is the area of fisheries, or should I call it the Marine Living Resources Fund, or should I call it the Fisheries Branch. I'm raising that intentionally, Chair, given the governance gaps that are created by the very nature of the fund. For example, Chair, you would have two audit committees, the audit committee for the department as well as the audit committee for the fund. That on its own raises questions as to if there are operations, governance, risk or control concerns happening at the level of the Marine Resources Fund, which governance structure ought to be pursuing those. So I think that whole fisheries area is a matter that we engage with the department, seeking a way forward such that the whole governance arrangements are attended to. And the last area I want to raise is what I would refer to as a strategic alignment. By this, Chair, I mean an alignment between needs and resource deployment, an alignment between mandate and function. Maybe if I make an example on the alignment between mandate and function, I think I mentioned earlier the issue of resources being allocated to provinces, for example. So the question of if something happens at a provincial level, to what extent does the department have authority to intervene on those issues? And the question of investing in the current versus investing in the future, I also link this with investing, for example, in ICT. An exercise was done which suggests that we need, for example, about 550 million in order to bring our ICT to the level where it can support the control environment of the department. But would we be able to do that if we're running short of resources on the COEs? So, Chair, all of these manifest in a number of unattended findings at an operational level. Largely, those findings would relate, would for example, relate to findings relating to the supply of evidence in the audit of predetermined objectives on targets which would have been better attended had there been effective ICT systems. And lastly, Chair, let me also mention that we have had problems in the forestries branch with incidents of stealing at the level of where the operations and the plantations are taking place. And again, if you look at what needs to be done there, it relates to investment both in systems as well as in human resources in order to put measures that are preventative. So in a nutshell, Chair, when we say we're comfortable, we do not mean from an audit committee point of view we're comfortable with the status quo. All we mean is that we continue to observe and to monitor the actions and responses of management to the faced challenges, and that we are comfortable that effort is applied. We certainly, Chair, are not comfortable with the status quo. We're not comfortable with what obtains because problems exist. And as a result of this resource challenge, some of these problems are persistent. Therefore, they become repeat findings by both the external as well as the internal audit. Chair, I think I want to stop there and respond to questions by the committee. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. You know, Auditor General has raised several issues which you have not touched, Chair. Auditor General raised the consequence management of the department as a challenge. Auditor General raised the supply chain problem, and you have not touched on them. And for me, issues that you have raised are at the core of making departments perform, but they are those that were supposed to be dealt with, which are basic things for the department for you to improve. You know, one of the things that what the CFO has raised as one of the things that we must lobby for more funds for this, additional funds for employees, we should be convinced that the money that is there has been utilized correctly as a committee. And we don't get the your report in terms of those matters of emphasis that was raised by Auditor General, particularly in terms of consequence management, performance management itself, and your supply chain, where they have not been corrected. Are we actually in the right direction in correcting all those things, so that it will actually inform what would, how we're going to take the process forward in making sure that we lobby for the department, because that's going to be the basis of this committee to say the money has been utilized correctly. This is the books. We're very clean, and therefore there is a need for this department to get more money. So in those things, you have not touched on them. This one, that the ones that you have raised are very much important, but there is this basic one that every department is supposed to follow, and which has not, you have not touched on them. Let me allow members to engage on the report. Honorable Maloyi.
I shall say before the report, it was quite nice to listen to the unwritten report, which you will recall that we took a decision here that we don't take...
you have it?
No, it's not there. Just listen to me, Chair. You will get what I mean. It was nice to listen to the unwritten report presented by the Chair. So it will be nicer if what you have been saying can be written down in order for this committee to have records of what you have just said. Now, Chair, what he did not do, he did not talk to what has been presented to us. He didn't. So I'm simply saying it will also be nice if he can go through the report which they have presented, which talks to some of the issues that were supposed to be done by the department. He did not do that exercise. So I'm saying if we can go through this in order for us to be able to pose questions on those. And then this one which he presented, let him write it down. Let's have what he has been saying on paper. It will make work easy for the committee. Thanks, Chair.
Now I understand what you're talking about. The report does not actually relate to the content. No. Yes. Can we then have honourable members engage with the report? Third quarter report. Any members to bite on? Honourable Steyn and Honourable Gapa.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm sorry I was a bit late. Chairperson, I would start at the shortfall of the 68 million rand for staff expenditure. I am also aware that there was a bit of a shuffle at the minister's office about 2 weeks ago, if I'm not exactly sure of the dates. And some of the problems arise out of staff increases, salary increases, and other things that was apparently done illegally or not in the correct way. I would just want to find out if that is correct, if there were increases that certain people got and others not, and that it caused unhappiness within the department, and if that is true, what is the effect on this shortfall? I also think it's not for this portfolio to deal with staff shortfalls. There is a portfolio with public enterprises that we need to look after the specific things. Then, Chairperson, I just wanted to find out, I see there's a report on slide 44 on the bird flu. Other outbreaks, we have heard the radio adverts over the weekend for the big swine flu or whatever it is. What is the current status of that? And then I have asked Chairperson that this committee also get a feedback on the listeria outbreak. The piggery industry is still in serious distress because of that. We haven't received any feedback on what is going on. Then, Chairperson, on the audit matrix, I agree with Honourable Molloy. I was almost shocked to listen to the Chairperson on what is going on. And I don't know if I heard correctly, but stealing in forestry, I think that's what was said. We need to get these things in writing so that we can follow up on issues like that. Chair, and I want to repeat again, I hear the issue of money. There's always a reason why we can't do something. I said in the past, I sit with myself, with my computer, with written questions that I got from the minister on how much did they spend on A, B, and C. And I can work out for myself that money is being misspent or not used in the correct way. Last year, I found that 1.4 million rand is spent on 1 kilometers of fencing. It's things that can easily be picked up with people that sit down. I think there's a lack of will, Jay, to fix these things because, you know, it is a problem that most of the money goes to provinces, but there must be a way that it can be followed up. It's a conditional grant. What kinds of conditions are we putting in place? If people can't report properly on how the money is spent, they can't get their next quarter money. It must be as easy as that. I can't understand, Chairperson, that we must deal with this every year. Money is being stolen from farmers. Every time we go out to farmers on the ground, we can see them suffering. And then we wonder what happens to the money that we discuss here every year. I'm somewhat unhappy, Chair. I don't think there's positiveness in what I heard here today.
Thank you, Chair. Only three. One is on slide 12. On that one of the animal improvement schemes, the two animal improvement schemes. Just to know if these two schemes are the ones which would have been mentioned in 16, 17, 18, and then 18, 19, or whether these schemes also are part of, are a basis of information, the data that will be used or that is being used on other schemes, so that we cannot be made. I'll be happy to know if these are the only schemes that are continuing over the years. Secondly, on 15, the second paragraph where you have got a recruitment and selection of 18, 19 graduates intake. I think maybe it's the report of the achievement that is not complete, because now on the report is interviews, which does not take me to selection, which maybe I think by now we have gone to that stage. So maybe I feel somehow that the report is not complete. There is something else which has been done which is not reported. Lastly, on the report of the chair of the audit committee, internal audit, I had a mention of somehow a repeat findings, which maybe I would be interested if there's anything that is being done in order to overcome that problem of a repeat finding from audit, internal and external auditors. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. The question on the shortfall, 68 million by Honourable Steyn, I will request the CFO to deal with. The question on the bird flu, this is how I may respond, because Honourable Steyn is talking about the status, the feedback on listeriosis. As I'm talking, Chair, I know that the program is compiling a the status, you know, because as time progresses, you know, the status...
Can we leave the listeriosis thing, because we are going to give a verbal report which we'll have a problem with?
Okay,
We had agreed as this committee that we'll call the three departments after 3 months.
Yeah.
And the 3 months has not yet arrived. So members must just be very patient. We'll call them to come and give the report on that, on those resources. So we don't want a verbal report because verbal report will give us problems.
Thank you, Chair. And this one is, I think it was a repeat, that we must have a written report, audit report, as indicated by the Chair and Honorable Maloyi. And the others, I think, by Honorable Steyn, are mainly comments, you know, the experience of the misuse of 1.5 million used for 1 kilometer fence and the follow-up on the conditional grants. I think that is, the Honorable Member has been talking about this quite a lot. In terms of internal audit, repeat findings from the Auditor General, what is it that we are doing in terms of that? I think the CFO and the Chair may also comment on those. Thank you, Chair. The animal improvement schemes by Honorable Kapa, those are the schemes that are ongoing, you know. Those are that are going over Kaonafatso ya dikgomo. Every year we have a program in those two animal improvement schemes. Thanks.
Okay. Before you respond, CFO and Chair, page 29 on the presentation, there is the sector research agenda monitor, which shows the actual, but there is a sector research agenda implemented through the RTF program, which has got the actuals. I want to get clarity on this, which research you're talking about. I understand the research monitor because there is somebody who's doing research on your behalf, but the second one, I don't understand. If you can. And the chair of audit committee has raised the issue of the lack of capacity on the policy planning and monitoring and evaluation, that they are unable to follow the money. But Chair, this committee was told that Treasury has given you the 60 million to do that job. If we can get a briefing why we still have the problem when there is the money has been given on that task. And then on program one, for the past 3 years, there's been a fail to spend the money for the capital, and the delay was based on public works. But the question is, what is DAF doing on that work? So if we can get that response.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. The one on Program 1, I think DD Jean Dompela will respond to that one. The one on sector research agenda implemented through the RTF, just to give the Chair and the Honorable Members a context, on an annual basis, the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries implements research projects on various topics. But what we have done
we have entered into a service level agreement with the National Research Foundation, which is a research body, to implement, to do the administrative part of this implementation. So what we do, Chair, we transfer funds to the National Research Foundation, and they administer this work for us. They do the advertisements to get applicants from universities, various universities, and they make sure that they monitor the work which is done by these universities, and they report to us on a quarterly basis. So I'm not too sure, Chair, if I'm answering your question, but that is the context of this sector research agenda.
Why do we have ARC if you have to commission other research? Why do you have other research when you have your research institute, which is ARC?
Chair, that is a legitimate question that you are asking. We have started discussions with the ARC to look at how going forward the ARC, you know, can take over this work from the NRF to do this work for us. This service level agreement between ourselves and the National Research Foundation was signed a couple of years ago, you know, but we have come to a point, Chair, where we decided to say, I think we rather use, you know, our public entity which is responsible for research. So there are currently discussions between us and the ARC to see how we can take this forward. That's how I can respond to it, Chair. May I request the CFO through you, Chair, to address the issue of 68 million shortfall, and then Baban Tombela, I think you may also comment, Baban Tombela, in terms of the ODC study that has been conducted to look at the capacity issues of branch PPME and the underspending in terms of public works projects. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. I would first want to comment around the issue of Program 1, the underspending. I think the Chair is correct in terms of saying for the past 3-4 years we have had this problem with public works. I'm happy to indicate that we have engaged with public works and we have canned the project of the Stellenbosch quarantine station because we have been engaging but with no results. In our new budget, we do not have funds for the Stellenbosch quarantine station. That's the first one. And then the second one that I want to highlight is around the 68 or 69 million. When we did our projection, we use the budget that we were given by National Treasury in terms of the COE ceiling. There's an amount of 2.182 billion. That is the ceiling that we have to stick to. And when we did our projection based on our actual expenditure at the end of April, our actual expenditure for April amounted to 165 million. And then we did a projection making some assumptions that the same number of officials will still be there at the end of the year. We came up to an amount of 1.986 million. and then there would have been a surplus of 212 in terms of payment of salaries, just salaries. But then compensation of employees have other factors coming into it. For example, there's issue of overtime. Now, based on our overtime for the previous year, we focused an overtime amount of 41 million. And then there's issues of service bonuses of 4.5 million. And then there's leave gratuity of 14 million. And then the department has also foreign offices, and the foreign allowances forecast for now is 31 million. But then at the time when we did this analysis, there was not yet any agreement between the state and the unions, but our projected salary increase from 1st April 2018, we based it at 7%. Now, if we take the 7%, that would give us 139 million. Now, all those expenses that I've spoken about, other than the salaries, amounted to 277 million. And then if you take out the 277 from the 212, that's where the shortage of 69 million comes from. And I must also indicate that in this calculation, we have not included the issue of occupational OSD, special dispensation. Then there's also issues of notch increases that we have not taken into account. So that's the situation around the 69 million. And then if Mr. Ntombela will talk around the issue of were there any salary increases paid to some and some were not paid. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honorable Members, DM.
Also, Chair, for the mic.
Also, so.
Okay, thank you, Chair, Honorable Members, DM, colleagues. The question that came was whether there were any irregular salary increases on staff. I think this comes from, you know, the old public service regulations. There was a provision that were aimed at giving executing authorities, by this I mean ministers or MECs, discretion to attract and retain a staff of high skills. So in that sense, an executing authority would say if there's a skill that is expensive, raise the salary that is on offer at recruitment and selection. And also, if there is a belief that a department may lose certain skills, a department was allowed in terms of the public service regulations of 2009-1 to raise the salary of that employee. It did not raise the rank, but it was the remuneration that was raised in order to retain that staff or those staff members for critical and scarce skills. However, for the current regulations that we have now that were promulgated in 2016 and came into effect on the 1st of August 2016, those provisions, particularly the one on retention, which allowed a department to raise a salary for purposes of retention, that one has been done away completely. The one for attracting high-level skills is still there, but it's very limited now. There's very little movement that you can do in respect of that. Relating to the study to strengthening the capacity to follow particularly custom monies, the department has undertaken a study, a work study investigation
into that in order to strengthen the coordination around the CASP program, the coordination, the M&E, the report is there, it's finalized now. It has been, it's on the EXCO agenda for consideration and decision making. So, thank you, Chair.
Chair?
On the, I think the questions that I'll respond to, one relates to supply chain management, the repeat findings, and I'll talk briefly on the allocation that was made to address some of our monitoring and evaluation challenges. Chair, there are improvements on the supply chain. This would be evident, I think, when we present the annual report in the reduction, for example, of irregular expenditure. It's an area we monitor on a close basis, quarterly basis, so we're comfortable that there are improvements in that area. In relation to the audit findings, the previous year's audit findings, I think as the report indicates, about 44% were resolved, 19% in progress, and about 37% are not yet resolved. So we also monitor this area on a quarterly basis, and we obtain reasons for the areas that are not attended to. And then with relation to actions to address repeat findings, we do, for example, a risk-based plan for our internal audit. And one of the things that we shall be doing in the 2018-19 financial year is to audit the comprehensive agricultural support program as a result of the findings that we have picked up in the previous years. So part of it is proactive action so that we pick things before they even get subjected to the Auditor General. But we also, for example, had management undertook a joint session with the Auditor General at the PPME unit in order to deepen the understanding of the root causes of the issues at hand. But mostly the tightening of internal control is what helps to prevent repeat findings. Chair, management may share even further. I do know that notwithstanding the allocation of 60 million by the National Treasury, there have been operational challenges in the utilization of that investment speedily to address the gaps. So whilst some resources have been spent, but I think there's been slowness in the spending of those resources, resulting in the delay in the reaping of the benefits that would arise from those benefits. But I believe that management could talk even deeper in this area. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. You want to respond to the DG?
Thank you, Chair. There is a question which we omitted by mistake, Chair. It was asked by Honorable Kappa on slide 15 relating to the recruitment and selection of the 2018-19 graduates. This matter, Honorable Chen, Honorable Kappa, refers to our internship. We do have an internship program. We take them for 1 year, and we, for 2018-19, we have taken 255 total. They are placed with different units within the department for 12 months, but some of them do get employment before they can complete 12 months in the department. The reason for this, Honorable Kappa, is that we feel that if we do this, there are two benefits. One is remuneration, because they get a stipend every month, but the second is that they gain experience and therefore they become more
marketable. But I must indicate that it will be important, based on the question asked by the Honorable Member, to provide a detailed report in terms of a breakdown of this intents in terms of provinces and districts. We do have that report with us. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, there is one answer which I did not get on the question which was raised by Honorable Spain. Because in that question she says there were some razzmatazz at the department because other people received the increase, others did not receive an increase. The only part that I received was that what the regulation said in 2009 and so on and so forth. But is there such a situation where others received the increase, others did not receive an increase? The second question is that the internal audit says that some of the action plans of the department are not addressing issues or that were raised by the Auditor General. So what I would want to establish is, have you had a session or a conversation with the department on those issues? And what is the status now? Have they corrected those, or do we still have a similar problem? And then this 37% of the unresolved audit findings, can you just mention those quickly for the benefit of the portfolio committee? And then just the two last questions. You know, Chair, we were told that 14 fishery inspectors were implicated in the Bingis case, and so on. Was there anything that was done to deal with this problem of the 14 fisheries inspectors? And the $67 million, is it now in our account or is it still outside? And if it is still outside, what are the challenges? Why are we not getting it into our account? Because this matter was resolved, I think, some months ago. The last point which I would want to raise, Chair, is it relates to slide 41 and 42. I just went through those slides. They look similar. CFO. If they are not similar, you might want to indicate as to where are the differences. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Malue. You know, this thing of 60 million of treasury on monitoring and evaluation was meant for oversight, but we were told that there is a study commission. So, I don't understand. Means that the department didn't have a plan even from the start when they asked conditional grants to the province. When Treasury gives them the money to follow the money in the provinces, they then commission the study. I need to get clarity on that. What does that mean? To add on this thing of fishery, last time we were told that there is money just coming to your account, and where is the money now, and is it still there, and what processes are being followed to get who has deposited the money into your account? Uh, And then the forestry theft, what type of theft are you talking about? Because just to say theft in forestry, they check, they didn't tell us the truth. Your mic is on. You can start because your mic is on.
Chair, thank you. Thank you, Chair. The theft in forestry, Chair, relates to timber, largely, where there are instances of collusion between our personnel and locals who would collude and as a result of which would lose stock. The examples in relation to the unresolved matters, and most of them are in the area of audit of predetermined objectives, virtually in most, in almost all of the programs, 1, 2, 3, 4, where the findings, both by the internal audit and by the auditor general, around the provision of valid, complete, and accurate evidence supporting the reported performance would not happen as it is required. Some of them would also be in the area of food and food security and agrarian reform, for example, issues relating to inadequate monitoring. So the AG would have identified it in the previous year, internal audit would have identified it, and it would continue to be identified, and it would be a matter linked to the shortcomings in the monitoring space. The inadequate maintenance of project lists, issues of late payments of DORA conditional grants, you could see that if you were to lift two, should I say, overarching areas, you would say they relate to the systems relating to the provision of evidence for performance information, and would say they relate to monitoring and evaluation in the main. Of course, some of them would relate to the administrative space, in the HR space, in the financial management space. There would still be issues that, for example, would be picked up. Some of those issues might relate to accruals, might relate to commitments. So these are issues of that nature that we're referring to. Yes, there are actions which we are monitoring by management to deal with this. There's been an engagement even as early as last week between management, internal audit, external audit, in order to address some of these issues flowing from the interim report of the auditors, as well as from the issues that were picked up in the previous years. The addressing of these matters largely requires the instituting of a system, which is where from our observation as an audit committee, most of the shortcomings lie from there. The systems that address these challenges are largely manually driven and therefore open to human error, which then results in the non-addressing of the root causes. Although you can see the efforts applied, but because there is no, should I say, elaborate complex system that can address the problems. And let me make an example of the IDs for the summer, the farmers supported. The department would place reliance on Department of Health, of Public Works, in order to validate those farmers. Sometimes the reports from the Department of Public Works arrive late after the department has had to report on the number of farmers supported. And if it is picked that 20 of them are either deceased or non-existent, that by itself becomes a finding. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
There is a question by Honorable Maloy about the 14 fisheries inspectors, DDG Ndundani. May you please respond to that one and the $67, $67 million.
Is it? $7 million.
And then...
$7 or $7.5 million.
And then the other one, yes, asked by the chair, money coming into the account of the fisheries, who, what amount. But before she comes in, chair, Honorable Maloy, it's the right observation, slide 41 and 42, and it's not the fault of the CFO. I will own up that mistake, Chair. It is. I think that slide 42 should have been removed. So I take the blame for that, and I apologize for that. And then the question which has been asked by the chair, the 60 million chair, just to add to what Babantombela said. Chair, some of these things we have to admit. When this money was allocated to the Department of Agriculture, it came in the name of CASP monitoring. And that created a very, very big problem in the department, because we have a CASP unit which is standing alone, and we have PPME branch which is responsible professionally for monitoring. And so there was, for some time, you know, it wasn't very clear to the department, you know, who actually should be the custodian of this, because it came in the name of CASP monitoring. But then as time progressed, Chair, and remember that as we were still debating, time was going. And after some time, then it was decided that, okay, let attention be given to the two, PPME branch, which is responsible for monitoring, and CASP office, which is responsible for the administration of the fund, to take it to the provinces and to see how they have spent. So Chair.
Did are they accompanying the money to the provinces? Is it what you are saying?
No.
What is it? CASP. Administering funds to the province.
Yes.
So what? They use money to administer that money to the province.
No, Chair.
Okay.
They don't. As an office, they just make sure that at the beginning they convene provinces through what is called National Assessment Panel, and they listen to the business plans of provinces, and then they say, yes, Eastern Cape for this year will give you so much. Mpumalanga will give you so much.
That process has been done before.
Yes.
So, but you have requested money for treasury money to monitor the CASP.
Yes.
Because the portfolio committee was complaining about the monitoring.
Yes.
So you cannot go there, because that is a process for the fact that you get conditional grants is based on that evidence,
yes.
Which means that the budget was supposed to have. We have been budgeted even before that one.
Yes, Chair.
So the story that you are coming with now.
Yeah. So ultimately, Chair, just to conclude, it was agreed that we have a unit in the department which is called Organizational Development Committee. Their responsibility, whenever you want to have a post, you know, they are the ones who determine, you know, the level of the post, the scope of work, and the profile of the post. So they were given the responsibility, therefore, to look at both the CASP office and PPME branch to look at the capacity constraints. So the study that we are talking about, Chair, looked at the capacity constraints of both PPME and the CASP office. So that study has been completed. It is the one that DDG Corporate Services is saying it is an item of agenda so that the report is approved.
No, DM, you request money for monitoring and you go and do the study from Treasury. Now we must go and ask the another money. Your department take the money which is supposed to go, and because monitoring is, it says follow the money where it's going. They go and do the study with the money. And when you have organ, I don't want to ask you whether in the department you didn't have the capacity, because you have the human resource development of, section, which is by the nature of employment. You will have the specialist on work study, you will have human resource manager, you'll have all those people. Why is the money used for the study? And how much was cost? Maybe I'm not asking you a DM, I'm just alerting you that the money that we requested for monitoring, it went to do the study. So, who did the study, and why if we've got the personnel in the department, why should it cost money if the people who are residing in the department, or did you get the specialist outside? Why didn't we get the specialist outside to monitor the funds than to create another? I don't understand the story. Honorable Stein, you.
Chairperson, I'm really frustrated here. We've tried to help the department. The biggest frustration is the fact that there's no monitoring and evaluation in this department. We've been saying it for years. Now money was given and it seems like it wasn't used. I don't know, Chair, we need to get some update in writing from the Minister on what is going on in this department. What is monitored? How is it monitored? Why was the fund spent? And on also that in writing from the... This whole thing of the stealing in forestry, and it's been said so casually here, and what has been done about it? Chair, I'm feeling very frustrated here. This is not good enough. I don't know if the department is monitoring anything. It can't be so difficult. I need proposals that something we need to call the minister in here. There must be a report. I'm also I don't know.
The Osakala minister, and then when the minister is not here, he must actually take the punches.
I'm sorry, you interjected on that question, Chair. So I thought that we'll conclude. We have a lot of questions that we have posed and they've not been answered.
Okay, Chair. Let's allow the DDG Fisheries to respond to the outstanding questions. DDG Ndundani.
Thank you very much, DDG. Morning, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, Honorable Deputy Minister and the colleagues. There was just two questions asked. On the Bengis issue, this case is as old as 18 years now. It really started around year 2000. We were part of DIT. The branch fisheries was part of DIT at the time. The 14 fishery compliance officers that were involved in this case, I am informed half of them resigned from the department in 2001. And the rest of them were charged in 2001 as well, but all of these individuals have subsequently left the department around 2003. But I think the issue I just want to quickly brief the honorable members on is the issue that relates to the monies. The stealing of Bengis was not prosecuted by the government of South Africa. It was prosecuted by the government of the United States. Though he was stealing the fish in South Africa, he was taking the fish to the United States and he was making profits there. So it was the United States that was running the prosecution. And the United States of America, the District Court of New York, gave an order in favor of South Africa in 2013 that South Africa has been the victim of this massive looting by Bengis. And South African government must be remunerated with an amount of $29 million. That was 2013. However, the South African government never followed that court judgment. This case was dealt with by the state attorneys since year 2000. And it was only in 2016 when we resuscitated the case. So Bengis is ordered to pay $29 million to the South African government in 2013. I would loosely say the South African government loses or drops the ball and never follows the money. And only in 2016, we became aware of this. And how we became aware of it was in an international meeting. The prosecutor of the case at the time was making a presentation and we were approached by the Norwegian government to say, South Africa, you never claimed the money that you were supposed to repatriate and bring back to South Africa. And it was only in 2016 when we started making engagements with the United States of American government. And we further discovered that there was an amount of $5 million that South Africa should have claimed. And that money was never claimed. And the U.S. government reallocated it to NOAA, which is the National Oceanographic Atmospheric Administration. So that $5 million got swallowed there. And the only remaining money was about $1.2 million that they were also about to reallocate within their institutions in the U.S. So we were able to repatriate that $1.25 million, and in November of last year, that money was transferred to the National Treasury, and National Treasury transferred it to the department, and we've got evidence that we can produce on that. It was on the day of transfer, the exchange rate amounted to $17,863,000. And that money was transferred to the MRLF from the DAF account. The CFO signed on that, and the acting DG at the time, Mr. Ramasodi, signed on that transaction. It was upon revival of this case that we did, using private attorneys, because we saw that the state attorneys have had this case since 2000. And the evidence we were getting from the United States of America even included affidavits of certain individuals in South Africa telling the United States of America that the government of South Africa is not interested in recuperating the monies. It was against that background that we resuscitated the case and we used private attorneys to follow this case. And in the short space of 6 months, we were able to have these inroads. We then petitioned the government of America to re-sentence Bengis. And Bengis was re-sentenced last year. And that court order was raised by the judge from $29 million to $67 million at the request of the South African government. Now, the challenge was that Bengis was pleading bankruptcy, that he could not even pay the $29 million because he did not have money. Now, the judge has even increased the order to $69 million and he was still pleading bankruptcy. So we had to try and do a tracing exercise of the assets of Bengis. And the judge gave us a leeway that if we can find assets of Bengis to the value of $69 million, we can be able to confiscate those and take the money. So we then found that there was $22 million that Bengis has hidden in trust in Jersey, island of Jersey in the UK. And Bengis was asking the bank, SG Hambros, to release that money of $22 million. So we were able to make a submission to the Royal Court of Jersey that they must freeze that account of Bengis to keep that $22 million so that it can form part of the $67 million. However, we still needed to find a balance between $67 million and between the $22 million to the fulfillment of the $67 million, and we have been able to do that work. It is now in progress. That's why there was a media statement that was issued that we are now activating diplomatic channels to first have Jersey release the $22 million, which the AG of Jersey has committed in doing so. And we are also having the American government pursuing other assets of Bengis, because we were able to trace his assets to the value of $100 million, and that process and that work is under progress. Honorable Chairperson and honorable members, we can be able to provide documentation and evidence of this work. Thank you. The second matter that was raised was relating to the $7.5 million. This relates to a contract that was irregularly awarded to a company called Wiljaro that was to process and market abalone. They were awarded a contract to the tune of 90 ton of abalone, of which contract was then withdrawn by the court. The matter has been in the courts for quite some time now, since 2017 January, and it was as a result of that contract that the department received a $7.5 million payment from a company in Hong Kong that supposedly was the company that was going to receive this abalone. That money is still in the account of the department. The people who claim to be the owners of the money have come to claim the money, but the money is not cannot be released because the matter is under investigation by the Hawks. So the money has to still remain in the account of the department. Subsequently, after this contract was withdrawn by the court, the members of the company Wiljaro have alleged that the minister, myself, the acting chief director of monitoring, compliance and surveillance, and the Ms. Nazima at finance, we have relations with some underworld mafias in China or in Hong Kong that relates to the sale of abalone. So that has further added to further reports and investigations by the Hawks. Thank you, Chair.
Are they all the questions? I want members, are your question all of them answered before I give the DM? Okay. DM?
Thank you, Chair. Honorable members, I think the issues raised by the honorable members are noted, but just on this monitoring and evaluation money which was allocated by National Treasury, and the study that is being spoken about. So we're still going to find more detail about it. But I just wanted the DDG to clear this one out. Is there any portion of that money that is being used in the study? I think if you could share with the honorable members, that's one. Two, I think quite raised this issue even before. The biggest question was, are we monitoring efficiently the CASP funds at the moment? And I think that's one of the questions which are troubling the honorable members. I would like the DDG to respond to that pointedly. And having said that, Chair, I think I would request that we submit a written report to the committee on the monitoring of CASP. What are we doing? What money are we using? And also the findings that we are getting with the monitoring that we are doing. I think if we were to do that, it will also help all of us to have a better understanding exactly as to what is happening. There have been all types of allegations around CASP,
and I think it's fair that we present a written report to the committee about what is happening around the CASP, the monitoring thereof. Thanks. But if the DDG in the meantime could just help with answering those questions.
Honorable DM, Honorable Chair and members, thank you. May I just confirm, Honorable Chair, that none of this 60 million was used for the study that we are talking about. The study which was conducted was done internally by a specialized division which is dealing with organizational development issues. So the capacity of the department was used to deal with this. But I think CFO can explain in terms of you know, the 60 million itself, you know, its status. I think I will leave it there. Chair, in terms of the monitoring of CASP, I think DM has put it well. We would request the chair to give us an opportunity to come and table our monitoring reports to the PC so that members can see what happens when we do what we call a project, CASP project verification visits. We physically visit this chair, having the business plan of the project. We look at what the business plan of the project says about the project. Then we go to the project once. We do these visits once a quarter, and we evaluate the status of the project, the progress of the project, against the business plan, and we write reports. And once we have written these reports, we make very specific recommendations, and these reports are then tabled at the Executive Committee of the Department of Agriculture with those recommendations as the focus, because these are the recommendations which are directed to the provinces where these projects are. So with some of our reports, we recommend that this project is doing very well. It has the potential to grow. We may invest more in it. With some of the reports, we recommend that the status of this project as we see it now, it will be a risk to continue such a project. So we make these recommendations and we direct them to the HODs in the provinces regarding this. And we would be ready, if the chair allows, to come and table such reports to the committee. Thanks.
Thanks, Chair. The simple answer to this question, Chair, is that the 60 million has never been used by the department. One of the things that the colleagues are not saying is that there was no clear direction on how this money should be spent. And since it was money that was not ring-fenced, and we're seeing that we're going to underspend all the money, we directed the money to other programs within the department. So the simple question that the simple response is, the money was not used for what it was intended for. Thank you.
Okay. Let's start. Even check at the next meeting's agenda, there is a CASP monitoring and evaluation, PRRR. So you'll have that opportunity to come and present.
because you'll have to talk about you know, the difficulty with this 60 million story is that we must request other money from Treasury. But the money was asked and was not utilized for that purpose, was redirected. So that is becoming difficult. Because our understanding, DM, is that when department requests the money, they would have a plan for that money. They don't get the money and then start to plan. You plan and get the money. So in this case, the department got the 60 million without planning because and it's a problem. I think we have to follow it up, DM, and is it the unfortunately DG is not here, DM. There is this lack of strategic leadership in your department. Because you can't have department getting money fighting amongst them, fighting one another when there is a leader who has requested. Because I assume the person who makes requisition to Treasury is the DG. And he will make that requisition with the understanding that this is what is going to happen. And the money comes into the department, then there is a fight among the sections that belongs to us, not to you. It's a problem. So can we... Any follow-up question on the report and Honorable...
Thank you, Chairperson. On slide number 17, so there's a talk about the co-ops that were supported. I would like perhaps that if we can just be given specifics in these areas, because they say Eastern Cape, Mpumalanga and so on. But if we can just be given areas so that we'll be in a position to go and see what is happening, which are these co-ops, how are they operating. So that is my request, so that now we do our oversight to our own. Thank you very much.
Okay, you know, if Honorable Kruger was here, was going to ask what then would be the role of small business, because there is a small development department. Why agriculture is starting training the cooperative when there is money that is available for co-op to be trained in that small business? And actually, if you look at the MTF as target DM, there is two main objectives that we might not actually meet. And is it 300 for small business, support for smallholders, and the 80. No, it's the 80. But in MTFS, didn't you have the 300,000? Because I see that it's not been mentioned here. Because there are two targets, 300,000 smallholder producer for the market by 2019, and the additional 80,000 smallholder producer receiving support for production efficiency by 2019. These are two objectives. And you don't see it anywhere. And there is a, what you call the department, is it unit or section? There is a section called trade and marketing and promotion and whatever. when we dealt with the APP, GM, there was a Auditor General had queries because there were things that could not be disclosed. They were more of security. And F, Portfolio Committee, our analysis, there is no security that is outside the minister's office. So we couldn't understand that objective. And this and this section of the department, one of its tasks is to create market for the working with NAMAC, create market for smallholders. And we don't get what the progress in terms of what they are doing. In terms of the trade relations, as we lose others, do we gain others' entrance? So who's the DDG, acting DDG, because I know the DG has gone in that section.
Mapindiwe, from the first of...
Where is she?
She's currently, they are busy with SADC ministers meeting at Beechwood.
You know, DM, you must go and look at that section and define the mandate properly. If it's intergovernmental relations, it should be named that, and they must do things with relate to that. Because the mandate of that section is a problematic. Until we get this clarity, CFO, there is no money that will go as treasure. When we know that there is money that has been utilized, we don't understand what for. So, and in the last, I remember one meeting we were saying that with regard to this addition money that you need, you have to go to your own department. Do your own research on your system and get the leakages and identify projects, programs that are not useful to the department and design the structure such that you would respond to your mandate. And then you can then talk, come back and talk about money increase. That's what we have said. Unfortunately, you're not part of that meeting, if I remember, CFO. That's what we told the department, and we expect that report that we said we have looked at ourselves. This is what we found, and what minister told, and the acting DG was Mr. Ramasoli, and minister, they've told us that they are busy with that investigation. We'll expect them when they are finished, they'll come back to us and present so that we are able to now start to talk approaching treasury with the concrete issues. So can we get ARC before we break for lunch? ARC?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Honorable Members, Deputy Minister. Firstly, Chair, just apologies from the CEO. Could not attend today's session. I also want to introduce the ARC's new Chief Audit Manager, who's Mr. Joe Motlagole, who's sitting next to me.
And this is for the second meeting that your CEO apologized. We will not tolerate that.
Gotcha. The report provides feedback to the committee in terms of work that's been completed in the ARC's audit improvement plan. Again, Chair, the audit improvement plan was devised in consultation with the ARC's internal audit and the AG. It was approved by the Audit and Risk Committee and Council in September 2017, and also the nature and composition of the audit improvement plan.
So you're supposed to operate these things. Who's operating on your behalf?
Sorry, Chair. Apologies, Chair. Thank you. Chair, if we go to slide six, it actually provides a high-level overview in terms of the nature of the audit improvement plan. An indication that it was approved by the Audit and Risk Committee as well as Council in September 2017. The Audit Improvement Plan comprises a total of 322 treatment actions that are directly linked to a total of 152 findings that was raised by the AG. Of the 332 treatment actions, there's 162 actions that are directly linked to the areas of qualification, which relate to property, plant, and equipment, receivables from exchange transactions, and payables from exchange transactions. With respect to the qualification areas, the nature of the treatment actions was to ensure, amongst others, for the correction of all prior financial year errors for the period 14-15, 15-16, and 16-17, as well as undertaking of 100% asset verification across all 11 ARC campuses of the ARC. Chair, the next slide just provides graphically in terms of that breakdown I just gave in terms of audit findings as well as treatment actions, then also an indication of out of the audit findings, how many of those findings were qualification findings, and then also unpacking what has been the treatment actions linked to those qualification areas. Slide 8 provides just a high-level overview in terms of progress. We've reported in the last committee meeting on the 30th of January progress against the progress made on those treatment actions for the qualification areas. We can report that as at 31st of March, we're standing at about 87 of those 162 qualification areas completed, with about 75 that's still in progress. Slide 9 provides just an overview again in terms of the green bars indicating those that's been completed, red which is not completed, the orange indicating the total treatment actions, and then the blue area just highlighting the number of qualification findings. During the process, we've identified a couple of constraints and challenges, which we have indicated on slide 10, some of them relating to areas of, firstly, the system constraints and challenges. We have identified also through the audit process that we needed to appoint a suitable service provider who would be able to assist us in terms of enhancing the functionality requirements of the enterprise resource planning system. Then we've also identified through the process that there's been some system technical errors as well as system bugs, which then led to us providing some limitations in terms of the functioning and the process of multi-year and corrections and year adjustments. B focuses on the HR constraints and challenges. It was reported in the meeting on the 30th of January of the Portfolio Committee that we had the resignations of both the Chief Financial Officer as well as the Group Financial Manager, as well as during that time we had one staff member who had gone on maternity leave. What that meant for the ARC, we had then corporate office finance staff had to continue with their normal work activities, inclusive of completing treatment actions within the audit improvement plan. This also in its own also prevented further challenges because they basically had to do both of these activities, and also we managed to also get temporary staff redeployed from our campuses to be able to focus directly on areas on the audit improvement plan. Chair, the last one which relates to further constraints, which is challenges within the audit improvement plan. So activities were undertaken in a majority of the audit improvement plan action areas. Some have been completed, although in some instances not sufficient evidence were provided to confirm that. Some of the action items required a review or an adjustment. For example, areas where we've had changes in contract clauses that needed to be made. And then there are some action items that were an ongoing nature, for example, the issue of debt collection, which the ARC is in busy with. Then there's also been, during the process, extended engagement with external government departments and agencies. In some cases, majority of them relates to those relating to debtors and funds that we need to be collecting. And then also the review and calculating, confirming prior year errors and subsequent adjustments where required, particularly in the area of working progress. Chair, on the way forward, there's been huge strides been made on the audit improvement plan with respect to the completion of treatment action areas, despite the mentioned constraints and challenges. A new ARC CFO and Chief Internal Audit Manager was appointed with effect of 1st of May. At the moment, the compilation, approval, and submission of the ARC 17-18 annual financial statements to the Auditor General and National Treasury, which was submitted on 31st of May, as well as the finalization of the 17-18 audit have been set as immediate priority areas. The team led by the CFO to work on a plan of action to deal with three areas. One would be people, process, and technology, with a focus being on the completion of the audit improvement plan, cleaning up of problematic accounting balances, which relates to the qualification areas, improve revenue recognition and collection processes, improve general control environment, resolve system issues, and filling of key vacancies, and then also devising a plan to address the going concern challenges. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much, ARC. Honorable members, that is the action plan, the response to the Auditor General findings, which ARC had told us that they have developed an audit matrix, which is looking at responding on all the findings of the Auditor General. So this is the progress as they presented the last one in January. Any questions and or comment on the issue of the issues? Honorable Mapanga, Honorable Steve.
Thanks, Chair. On slide on slide 9, on the bar graph, the property, plan, and equipment areas have 40% incomplete qualification areas. How do you plan to complete the missing area of qualification? Same applies to the payables from exchange transactions and the receivable from exchange transaction. How will you complete these areas? Lastly, on your way forward on slide 11, do you have time frame for dealing with people, process, and technology issues? And how do you envisage dealing with these issues? I thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I've covered on the questions regarding this. May I ask a question that they can respond to in writing? I was made aware yesterday of a vaccine that's again not available that will have a massive impact on the wine industry. Kroonhal, I don't know what is the English word for it, but they use it for the wine industry when they have to do the multiplication. I'll send it on to the department of the problem that they have in the ARC again. Can't assist. I don't know what's the English word for that. Kroonhal.
Thanks, Chair. No, Chair, my question is it's similar to that one of Honorable Mapanga, because I only have one, but let me put it differently. This team, which is led by the CFO, when was it established, or are you still going to establish it? And then the last point, which is related to what Reba Panga, just in future, just make sure that when you indicate that you are going to do certain things, just to indicate to us as to when are you going to do that. Then we are able to call you at that period to come to us and tell us whether you have been able to do it or not. But if it's just blank and so on, it doesn't have time frames, it gives us a difficulty. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. If I can deal with the question of the treatment actions, Chair, so the property, plant and equipment, we had undertaken a task to do 100% asset verification across the ARC. And what we've in the process of doing is to be able to make those adjustments and work that related to that outcome of that available, and actually through the system to be able to make sure that we can have an asset register. We have, or consolidated asset register, we have in the meeting that we presented in January indicated that we're working towards the timeline of May, which is end of May, for us to be able to work through these areas. We, however, want to also emphasize the challenges that we've also mentioned in the presentation that is, to a certain extent, hindering us in terms of finalizing that. So I think when we have the next call to come to the Portfolio Committee, we could then give an update in terms of where we are status-wise. Chair, I note the comment in terms of the timelines, which we will make the adjustment to the presentation for a follow-up. On the matter of the team being established, we've, as I've indicated, the CFO started on the 1st of May. He is, I think the engagement he's had in the process now was to finalize the financial statements, which was due 31st of May. The team that he has established is a team within the ARC, so there's already work that's been done within those areas. And we expect, so it will be an ongoing exercise, which we again also at the next Portfolio Committee can provide update on that matter. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, sir. Any follow-up question, members? Thank you very much for the presentation. We hope the audit report will be different. As we go through this, you can see you're doing the work, but this work must translate in improvement on the audit. So if we, at the end of the year, the report says something, then we're going to have difficulties with this. We appreciate the work that has been done now, but we hope it will translate to that improvement of the audit. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Agenda in the next, but because it's still early, we can take the presentation for the maybe before we go to the next agenda, because I've received the progress report on the investigation on AgriLife, I'm going to ask the Deputy Minister to just to speak to that before we go to the item, fishery issues.
This is the letter. Okay.
Thanks, Chair. I've been missing in action the whole of last week, so I'm requesting the DDG to deal with it. If we could just have a few minutes.
Chair, last week I saw this response to the chair. I think what we need to report.
No, if you don't know, just say I don't know. Minister will come and brief us.
Okay.
And leave it at that. Because if you start to say I saw the letter, then we start to have a problem. If you don't know it, just leave it to them. The writer will come and brief us because we're the one that was in the way.
Okay.
Thank you very much, DG.
Okay.
Can we get fisheries outstanding matters?
Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, Honourable DM and the colleagues, I want also perhaps, Chair, to first apologise that when we received the agenda the day before yesterday, the issue on the fisheries matters was not on part of that agenda, and it was only late yesterday we received a reviewed schedule that we will be requested to present on this. That was the reason why they were sent only in the afternoon of yesterday. There are three documents that I would like to talk to. The first document is the document that is titled the DAF Frame Times. For the proposal of what was presented to the Portfolio Committee on the 31st of January 2017. That is the first document. So this was already presented to the Portfolio Committee. It was dealing with 17 grievances that were raised by the fisher communities. It was dealing with the 17 grievances that were raised when the fishermen came to present to the Portfolio Committee, and they handed over various documents with a number of grievances. These grievances were separated into operational grievances versus legislative grievances. And that first document is making a summary of what the grievances were and what the proposed solution was, which was agreed when we presented in Parliament how we could deal with those grievances and the time frames that were given. The green indicates those things that we were able to deal with. A number of the issues that were relating to legislative matters, we had a different way of proposing how to go forward because As the honourable members will recall, this was coming from a court judgment by the Equality Court in 2007, and it was a little bit prescriptive in terms of who can benefit on this program, the issue on the years, number of years a person must be, and etc. And those were some of the issues that were raised there. So this summarizes, Honourable Chairperson, those issues, and I'm not going to go through all of those 18. As I say, we have already presented it to the Portfolio Committee. The second document that has colors of green, amber, and red, this is the progress so far in addressing a number of the issues that emanated from those grievances. And this just shows the status of the implementation since that time when we undertook to address these grievances. That as well, I am not going to go through it, Chairperson. We have submitted that, and it basically shows and takes you through in terms of what the issues are. The last one is a presentation, which I'm going to quickly talk to now. And this presentation is not only talking about the small scale, but it also talks to a topical matter that was brought before the Portfolio Committee that relates to the Eastern Cape Divers Association, where they sought to have access to the abalone species in particular. And I'll just briefly talk to that. The first page, which is page 2, honourable members, basically talks to the history and the background of the issue, and I'm not going to deliberate much more on that, but it basically gives the timelines of where the policy comes from, the milestones that have been achieved leading to the promulgation of the amendment of the Marine Living Resources Act, which then became a tool and an enabling tool that allows us to be able to go forward in terms of looking in terms of how we implement this policy. And suffice to say is that we have a total of 316 communities that have been identified, that have been verified, and we have 316 communities. And this range between the border with Mozambique and to the border of Namibia. And we're talking of a stretch line coast of close to 4,000 kilometer coastline. So there's been a very extensive amount of work that has been invested in identifying these communities and the number of fishers throughout these communities and understanding the limitation on the human capacity that we have. For instance, the small-scale fishing sector in the department only has 4 officials that are working in a stretch line of 4,000 kilometers of a coastline. But obviously we have gotten help and assistance from other units and including service providers that have been assisting us. Now we will take a look at the progress so far per province. The Northern Cape is by far ahead in the implementation, and there's 2 reasons that the case is so with Northern Cape. There's only 2 fishing communities, so it is rather quite easy to do things there. And the second one was the fact that the communities, the 2 communities, were already organized communities, so it was easy for us to do that. This slide takes you through on the timelines when we advertised an expression of interest and when we receipted and we finalized the appeals, which was June 2017, until the time minister signed off the final list of the fishers. Suffice to note is that in the Northern Cape, we've got 103 recognized small-scale fishers that are coming from those 2 communities. And a cooperative has been already set up a long time on the Clipby Fishing Primary Cooperative Limited. This community cooperative was successfully registered on the 28th of May of this year, and the department is just going through waiting for the final documentation. However, I can confirm that fishing is already happening by this community cooperative, and the training program, though it was already completed, we are doing a continuous support of this community cooperative. The next slide talks to KZN. We started the process of registration and the verification of the fishers there in July of 2017. until the final list was signed off in January of this year by Minister. And we have in KZN 2,184 recognized small-scale fishers. And the training of the cooperatives has been concluded in April of this year. We have developed a manual of how the training is happening, and we have shared this before, but we can still provide the training manual and the tools that we are using to do this work in KZN. The next slide is referring to the Eastern Cape. Here, Honourable Members, the work is currently in progress. It started on the 15th of May and is currently underway, and we will finish in 15 June. And we would love to extend an invitation to the Portfolio Committee, because this is work ongoing and it could kind of be an experience to see the real work that is being done. We have a schedule of the consultations that are happening throughout the whole of Eastern Cape, and would gladly share and request if the Honourable Members could be interested to visit those. But the work was concluded here when we signed off the successful fisher list in January of this year. And in the Eastern Cape, we've got 5,335 recognized small-scale fishers. And as I say, the training of the cooperatives is currently underway. Western Cape, Honourable Members, I must admit, is one of the most challenging provinces of the four coastal provinces in implementing the small-scale fisheries policy. One of the reasons that is making it difficult, Honourable Members will recall that part of the bulk of the complaints that were coming from fishers were fishers from this province in particular, and it was related to the interim relief that was advanced to the fishers since 2008. And among the complaints was the fight within the communities, where it was deemed that people who were not real fishers have been benefiting. And there were fishermen who were claiming that they are bona fide fishers and they have been out of the process since 2008. So it has been a very difficult task to really do the verification and the identification in the Western Cape, which, as according to the slide, according to bullet number four there, we even received, after we've concluded the process, a tip-off information from about 15 communities that were really in a fight, for a lack of a better word, and disagreement who should really be in the actual final list. And that is the reason why the Western Cape is a little bit lagging behind when it comes to the Western Cape. But we are trying to address these issues. That is why even the training has not taken place in the Western Cape. We are reconsidering the list in the Western Cape, coming out from that tip of information that came from 15 communities within the Western Cape. The next slide, which is basically the last slide, because the rest of the other slides just talk to resource material that could be utilized, is the future work that we are embarking on as the department that just relates to the working and the operation of the cooperatives themselves once they are registered, in terms of how their fee structures are going to be structured, and in terms of the allocation of the rights themselves. We are doing the allocation of the basket of species in a phased-in approach. The reason why we do a phased-in approach, it is because we do not know how much fish is available from Cape Columbine to the south, to the east of the country, of the coastline, because our research is very limited, mostly from Cape Agulhas to the west coast of the country. And on the other side of the country, we basically are very lean when it comes to the research. And we are partnering with academic institutions in this space to try and ascertain the extent of the abundance of the resource, so that we can be able, as time goes on, probably to look at increasing the allocation that is in the basket of species. The other issue is that we are also continuously monitoring on a needs analysis, on a needs basis, the cooperatives that are up and running now, first in the Northern Cape. In the Eastern Cape, as I say, will be registered soon in the KZN, so that we see how we then support these cooperatives as we go. And another key issue that the portfolio committee had raised is, again, not just granting the access, but what then happens to the fish once they have the access in terms of marketing and in terms of processing. And we are having different discussions with current commercial companies that are willing to move some of their operations to the other side of the coastline so that they can have meaningful participation with the community cooperatives. We have had a take-off agreement with Woolworths, who has is going to take up a bulk of the fish that is coming from the community cooperatives so that they can get the best price from it. And this is, again, dealing with the issue of the middlemen, because we've seen so much in fisheries, there is so many middlemen, and the real fisher ends up getting nothing from the resource after harvesting it. The next slide is just a resourceful slide in terms of the material. Now, honorable members, I want just to quickly talk on the Eastern Cape Divers and Fishing Forum, the matter that has been brought before the Portfolio Committee. It has also been widely on the media. Minister agreed to allocate 13 tonne of abalone to the Eastern Cape. But this abalone was not allocated only to the divers in particular, who raised questions and queries about this. It is for seven areas in the Eastern Cape. So it's basically from Port Elizabeth, if you were to say, and just until a little bit around Port St. John's. So there's seven areas that this 13 ton was allocated to. Now, when the allocation was done for this, it was required of the department to find a legal tool of how they will access this abalone. It was then taken a decision that under the current legislation, we cannot just allocate that to individual companies, because there became a fight and splinter groups from the ECDFF, whereby each individual started to form their own companies wanting this 13-ton to be allocated to these companies. But we have finally came to a conclusion that, and an understanding with them. We met with them last week, and we're having another meeting with them this coming Thursday, where we have brought in everybody, including the women who felt they were sidelined in the process by the other grouping. But we have come to a conclusion and an agreement that it is only through the small-scale cooperatives that that 13-ton is going to be allocated, and that once they form the cooperatives, those divers who may not necessarily be part of the cooperative will then provide their services, diving services, to the cooperatives themselves. Thank you very much, Chairperson and honorable members.
Is this the only thing that is outstanding?
According to my recollection, honorable Chairperson, I think so. However, if there is anything that I have left out, we can gladly, maybe on Thursday, provide that and prepare reports and a presentation to that. Thank you very much.
Okay. Can I allow honorable members to ask questions? Honorable members, that was the report. Honorable Mapanga, Honorable Kapa, Honorable Faith.
Thanks, Chair. Mine is a clarity-seeking question with regard to the appointment of the Makakazi Oshinjo. On your proposal, you said that DAF will terminate the contract following legal processes, while at the other hand, you said contract came to an end. So, can I be clarified? Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. It is that one of the Western Cape, bullet number 3. It said DAF assessed and finalized appeals in April 2018. Does it mean that being finalized means that they were resolved nothing else will come out of there. And then the last one is on the constant mention of cooperatives. In the area of IGR, is there any interaction between the fisheries or the department and that department of small business and cooperatives, which there's a lot of mention of cooperative attention?
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to find out about this thing of the abalone and the stories of theft at the offices and so on. Want to know how far is the department with moving that to a better system so that it's an open process, and can we get a report on that? And then, Chairperson, apparently the dooring by Parlemoon, what is Parlemoon? Abalone. Yeah, the small-scale fishings, they are apparently doing very well. Is there any assistance towards moving them into a on a bigger scale? And then, Chairperson, I received reports apparently that the department overran a small-scale vessel at the time when they were suspected and one person was killed. Can we get a report on that? The whole story of the wall gyro and the things that we have read in the newspapers about the media stories, the money that was given the minister and the president, I think, Chairperson, we need to find out from the deputy minister if we will get a full report on that.
Okay. I think the most important thing with the, when we're dealing with the small-scale fisheries, we said that if you want to empower, because those people have been in the sea getting fish, but they've never made any profit out of it. for them to be empowered, there should be assistance in process and transportation and vessels. And we say that the departments must interact with other departments, like trade and industry, small business departments, and those relevant departments, for them to be able to have a meaningful empowerment to those small-scale fisheries. The second issue, the Western Cape challenges. Because immediately when you pronounce with other provinces, it will cause uproar in the Western Cape. What process is in place and when are you going to finalize it? Because we have to finalize the matter. The committee welcome your affiliation to Indian Ocean Tuna Commission and the conservation of southern blue tuna. But the most important thing was they would discuss the issue of the membership and said what would be the return. We need to get the report on that, on the job created, transformational issues, and the infrastructure in terms of investment coming out of that the signing of the of that commission. The last thing is on the my question might relate to Honorable State. You know, I know in Ocean Pakisa, you have clusters. one of the cluster's law enforcement agents, which is coordinated to deal with the problem in the of the management of the sea. My biggest challenge is, why is it difficult for government to get through this syndicate around the marine species that we have, and in terms of the plan of that, because we might want to have a full report on this part of the the cluster on law enforcement agencies. Who are the role players, and what plans do they have in mitigating the theft in the ocean, and because with Abalo, it's very clear, seemingly everybody is involved, starting from prosecutor to police, everybody who's, if you listen to the story. So we might need the report that will deal with that specific, and if need be, we might, after the report, we'll see whether there is a need to involve the four ministers of that security class and see how the we'll get assisted from that cluster to deal with the issues. But the last thing is the aquaculture project that was visited throughout the province. There were supposed to be some follow-ups and assistance that was supposed to be done to make sure that those projects survived. And there is the one that was launched by the president, and we said in Petuan, we said that project cannot die because it was launched by the president. If we can get the report on those projects, including the one in Eastern Cape, but the Petuan one, we said department must take that one as a flag project because it was launched by the president, and they have taken president there. President has not actually decided to go there. It's them who said, president, we've got this nice project, come and open it, and we cannot allow it to die. Can we get response? Those that don't have answers, on Thursday we're still meeting, can bring the written report on those that you cannot respond on.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. I will start with the first question by Honorable Mapanga. Indeed, the proposal from the Portfolio Committee was that we must terminate the contract of Amakaka Soshintsho. But we then sought a legal opinion. And from the legal opinion, it was such that this is a contract already approved. There was monies that were already paid to the contract. And it was such that it would become expensive if we cancel the contract, because we would either have to pay them for the rest of the contract and still find another service provider to still do the work that needed to be done. And this seemed impractical because it was going to be more expensive, and it was based on the fact that we were operating from a limited budget. While we were sorting to find a solution, because the perception and the issue remained that the community that was being serviced by Amakaka Soshintsho were feeling that they do not like Amakaka Soshintsho. So what we did was to swap Amakaka Soshintsho so that we moved them from Port Edward to this side of the coast, from Zamba and until Port St. John's. And we took the service provider that was servicing this site so that they serviced the KZN area that was previously serviced by Amakaka Soshintsho. And it was within that work that was completed that then the contract even had to come to an end because its period ended. So that's why we are reflecting it in this way. I do, however, take the point that we may not have been too clear in terms of what happened between when we were asked to terminate it and when the contract actually finally came to expire. Honorable Kapa, I will link your issue to the issue that Honorable Chairperson raised with regards to the challenges and difficulties in the Western Cape. We concluded the process in the Western Cape in 2018 of April, but subsequent in concluding that process in April, then we got in May these complaints from 15 communities where they were coming up and complaining that they were not happy with the list of the fishers and everything. So it was only after April that we received those, and we are in the process now of finalizing how we're going to be dealing with them. We do think that at least by the end of July, we would have concluded that process of verification. It really involves very detailed issues of people that are involved in illegal harvesting and in illegal selling of the fish and everything. So it needed expertise that is outside of the department so that we can be able to do those verifications. But we anticipate by the end of July, we can be able to have attended to those things so that we start the process in the Western Cape. We want to fast track it because we understand, as Honorable Chairperson says, if we don't do that, it can open another can of worms, and the Western Cape being already politically charged, it could add an added burden into that. The cooperatives and our working with the Department of Small Business, I will be honest and say we have not really had meaningful discussions with the Department of Small Business. I take a fall on that one, Honorable Member. We have been trying to do what we could do in the space of time we had and try to get things started. However, it is inevitable that we will have to get into a partnership with the Department of Small Business, and this is the homework for us and the work that we intend to do going forward. Honorable Stein, I will let DM will respond to a couple of the issues I think that relate to other issues that need the response by the DM. But on the issue of the theft of abalone in the Paden Island stores, this has been a reoccurring matter. It has been coming up again and again. There was a decision taken by Minister, and it was in the pronouncement of the budget speech vote of the Minister as well, that we needed to tighten up the security and perhaps to even, is the word I'm looking for, to separate ourselves as the department from the handling of confiscated abalone. That process is currently underway. What we're basically doing, we are giving away the storage to a security company that is going to be responsible for the premise itself and is going to be responsible for safeguarding of the abalone, and they can only be paid if they have kept that abalone safe. So they will be paid on a commission to make sure that they know that if that abalone is lost in their hands, then they cannot be paid into that. We have upgraded the security system in terms of how we do the alarm system, and the number of guards that has been increased. We are getting a backup also from the police. Hopefully that we get a right team of the police, because I think, as Honorable Chairperson has said, the matter here is really very contaminated to the security cluster, if I were to say. The matter of the Doring by the small scale of abalone, that project, Honorable Stein, is in the list of the PAGISA projects. We are supporting that project. We are even supporting them with the kelp, which is the seaweed that that abalone feeds on. It comes from Area 5, and when we are allocating the fishing rights, we made a company, a commercial company there, to let their right to the community, so that it's the community itself that is harvesting the kelp for the feeding of that, then it becomes even much more less expensive for them vis-a-vis buying the feed, which is the kelp itself. The person who was overrun in an interaction, yes, I can confirm the incidents happened. When we deal with poachers or illegal harvesters, it's really a situation sometimes of life and death in the true sense of the word. And sometimes incidences such as these do occur. They are never intentional, but I can confirm there's nobody that died. But the newspaper article that got published claimed that there was somebody who died, and I can confirm to the honorable members, nobody died, but an incident did happen, and it could have resulted into fatalities. One of the way of dealing with this section, we have taken a decision that when we recruit fishery compliance officers, we recruit from the police. Because the challenge here is that you take a person who is a civilian like myself, and you make them fishery compliance officer, whose their main job is basically policing. Sometimes those people are not trained enough, they can't handle the guns, they can't really deal with criminals. Even when there are cases, they can't even open a case and do the statements in a proper way. So we've taken a decision that we need to relook in how we recruit fishery compliance officers, so that we don't just recruit as civilians. That including, again, the announcement that Minister has made and the commitment to take the military veterans as part of the fishery compliance work of the department, because we've got a lot of them that could be utilized. There was a contract that was there in place. It came to expire, and we are in the process as the department of reviving that contract. I'll leave the other part of it to DM to answer. Honorable Chairperson, on the issue, absolutely your point in terms of how we should empower the people with regards to processing and transportation of the fish and the vessels. We are having a working stream with DTI and IDC in particular, and they are very keen once the cooperatives are formed. Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members will recall that in 2013-2014, DTI issued boats to fishing communities who did not have the licenses. And unfortunately, the department, when they were policing, they found the communities fishing without the permits, and the department confiscated those boats. So we had entered into an agreement, and we've got a very good working relation with DTI, that they are waiting for our process to conclude so that then they can bring the funding that they have so that it can be deployed within these communities. We are working very well and making good headways there. The issue of the Indian Ocean Tuna Commission, Chairperson, and the Southern Bluefin Tuna Commission, absolutely. This portfolio committee endorsed, and the issue was passed through Parliament, that we should become full members. I am the Commissioner of South Africa on both of these commissions, and part of the work that we are doing and that we have been doing has been to motivate for an increased allocation for the tuna for South Africa. Honorable members are aware that tunas are not managed by one country because they are highly migratory. Tuna can move today between Durban, and in a week's time it is in New Zealand or in Australia. That's how fast this fish moves. It's a highly migratory species, and that's why a group of countries come together to manage it, and hence the subsequent meetings that we have to attend and tough negotiations that we have to enter into. I can confirm, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, that our allocation through the persistent negotiation that we have embarked on increased from 40 tonne of southern bluefin tuna to 450 tonne, resulting to an income of about 800 million rands for the South African fishing industry. It has resulted to 12 long-line vessels that have been already built, and we are going to provide detailed reports, Honorable Chairperson, to submit in terms of this. the jobs have increased from 1,500. That's what the tuna sector was employing. We are now sitting at 3,500 jobs as a result of this increased allocation, because if it is increasing, it means fishermen are spending more days at sea, it means they are bringing more catch, it means they are processing more catch, and it means those that are exporting more catch, more catch, and their revenue received by the country in so doing is very clear, and we are going to provide the reports around this. The last one, Honorable Chair, the second last one, the aquaculture projects throughout the provinces, this we can also provide reports on. We have been having a discussion with DPME. Charles, who used to do the update of our reporting, has left DPME, and we think they are struggling now to keep an update because we report every second week to the presidency, in particular DPME, for the work that we are doing. And lately we have seen that in their website, their reports have not been updated. There's significant work that has happened within this space. The IDZ project that the honorable members visited, it got privatized because there were problems in terms of the monies of that project. We are, however, still assisting them technically in terms of the finger links that they are providing, and those finger links go to the project as well that is in Hamburg, where the community cooperative is making a cob and mussels and oysters. The Petwane project, Honorable Chair, absolutely we will provide a report, but I must be upfront to say we have no very good report on that project. A couple of things really did go wrong in that project, but we can present a report in terms of what is happening and what we intend to do to revitalize that project. On the last issue, Honorable Members, around the issue of PAGISA and law enforcement, absolutely, Chair, there is work that is being done. There are also successes, albeit to say we have not really been upfront to talk about the successes that have been done under this cluster of Operation PAGISA and law enforcement in particular. However, two difficulties exist within this cluster. The one, Honorable Members, is that Operation PAGISA, when it was at a conceptual stage and at an implementation stage, it was made clear that there was no new money, and each department had to reprioritize from the monies that they had. So we have had good successes, but the reality is that funds had gone dry somehow, and those projects have literally been unfunded for quite some time now. However, the issue is that we are looking, hence we were saying within the MRLF, because the MRLF has the ability to generate funding, that we want to look at a hybrid model that can generate funding that can specifically be earmarked for law enforcement, because we think that's where we really need to focus on. The second difficulty, Honorable Chairperson, you have alluded to, is the extent of the matter when it comes to law enforcement within the fisheries space. The stakes are very high, and the issue is that we have got challenges both internally and externally, and it extends even to the security clusters. It is really an issue that we think needs to be taken up in a serious light, even to the level of the rhino poaching. Actually, we should be concentrating on this because we are losing an enormous income and revenue, the country that is losing. On abalone alone, last financial year, the illegal market of abalone, just last year alone, was over 3.8 billion rands just in one financial year. And these are people who are harvesting illegally, who are not paying any monies to the South African government, who are not paying export, who are not paying for permits and everything. And if you consider what a 3.8 billion could do for a government and how it can be redirected to programs of government, it is really worrisome, and it should be something we think we need to really refocus our energies and strategy in terms of how we can deal with it. Thank you, Honorable Members.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable Members,
I just wanted to respond on the Wiljaro matter. I think the most prudent way to deal with this is to allow the minister to present a written report to the committee. I think we'll convey that. Secondly, obviously there's so much criminality around the marine and marine resources. As it was said, you've got an ocean line of about 4,000 kilometers. So it's one area again which is like open borders, and it does need a closer working together with the security cluster. As you know that as DAF, we are not part of the security cluster, but this should not be the end of it. I think we need even a tighter working relationship with that cluster to make sure that there's a particular focus. If I may share with the honourable members, it's also a question of education. I was involved with the gambling industry at some stage, where you found that there was so much illegal gambling in the country. But before you could deal with that, you needed to engage on a very intensive education with the officials, both not just in the industry, but in the security cluster, the prosecutors, so that they could see that it's not just about phishing. There's so much about money laundering taking place there. People who are not paying taxes and so on and so forth. So I think there is that part that we must deal with. I think with the department, it's an area that we should look at. And I know we ended up having some prosecutors in some provinces which were just given to us to say, let them concentrate on this area. But it is a function of education by and large, and making sure to say how much as a country we are losing from money, as I'm saying, money laundering and so on and so forth. I think we need to do that. We are not part of the cluster, as it were, but that should not preclude us from working closer with the cluster. Again, which is a government problem, the question of coordination between departments. There's an issue that has been raised by the TTG here of one department funding vessels for a particular community. But that community, the first thing I would have asked, I was in that department, show us your license before I fund. It's just like giving somebody mining equipment without a mining license. But again, it talks to a better coordination between and amongst ourselves. And I think this is an area that we, again, should try to tighten ourselves as government. Let's just commit that the issues that we said will produce written reports, we'll try to do that ASAP. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, honorable members.
Any follow-up question? Thank you very much for the response. So can we then agree that, oh, Minister, because we've not received an apology, is he going to be here on Thursday? Because we should then prioritize the report that you talk about, DM.
Chair, I think we need to follow up with the Minister's office. But I know for a fact that there is a SADC meeting of ministers on agriculture, and it stretches until Thursday evening. So, but formally, we need to come back to you. Even I don't think that he's available this week.
But the other thing that we might want to look at, particularly on this strengthening the law enforcement agency on the marine living resources, is the collaboration of this government, your international relations structures around the sea. If we can utilize that, including with agriculture only, I've seen that the FAO is doing very well with the department on the management of diseases and pests in the border area. So we need to do the same with regard to seed, to partner with those countries that we share with them the border, and have a comprehensive plan on dealing with that. I know that there is working overlapping mandate between ourselves and GIA on the management. They deal with it. I'm failing to separate the mandate, but it seems they deal with the management of the sea and you deal with the species in the sea. Mm-hmm. So which there is a need for that collaboration with GIA, such that we are able, and I know that there was a process of finalizing the bill, and we should then use the opportunity how that bill is going to help us. And there is a lot of funds that are channeled to climate change programs in the obviously coming through here. But how then do we use that collaboration ourselves to access a lot of resources towards a recovery plan of our species in the sea? Because the cleaning of the ocean must then restore the recovery, or it must restore the or increase the species in the ocean. Yeah, so we should have that linkage in the. So I think in the next quarter we should actually go get the department must start to engage on those things as they deal with this program of cleaning the sea or working on the ocean. How then do we bring ourselves the program of recovery of the species that we are losing through this in climate change environment, and what is the plan? But what we have not dealt with DDG is we have talked about the capacity of the shortage of skills in that sector, and we have not actually get how far are we going in terms of training particular like I remember when the Minister of Police was still the DM who consistently say we have only one vet for fish in the whole country. So, but we cannot just say we have one vet and that does it. We should then have a program which says how then do you produce that short the skills, including working with those companies. How do we create, instead of them pulling out your skills, they should actually contribute to build another layer of skills. I know government is this responsibility to produce skills for the country, but it should not be such that it left your section without anybody. And last we have raised the issue of the black researchers in fisheries, which are not given more practical work to do, which is around issues of transformation that we have to follow on. So those issues should not be lost in the process. So with that note, thank you very much, DM and your team. We will then release yourselves and ourselves for remaining as members. If you still feel you can stay with us, that's no problem. So, but we have other business to deal with ourselves. But if you have other commitments, you can then be released, and members can have a 5-minute break, fresh legs. And in the meantime, we grab lunch, because the lunch is there. can we release the department if they are going? DM, you can remain if you want.
Unfortunately, I'm going to China, so I'll only have one day. I'm not going to see the Chinese. The whole ASC is going to China.
Yeah.
You know what? I always think if you can just implement 20% of what we have in China.
Thank you.
So, honourable members, can we can we look at the last item is the finalisation of the land bank nomination. Yes, it says strong strategic leadership, financial management, auditing, corporate law, corporate treasury, agricultural economics, agricultural research and development, rural development, development of finance and all economics in agricultural sector, credit risk and human resource management background. So this issue does not after you've checked your Lucius's CV and the requirements. And then let's start with the Rosemary Rose. Yeah? What's Sister Rose. Tavi, ever talk. Rose is my name. What have you eaten? Yes. This is this just heavy, somebody, but it doesn't have anything. Too heavy.
Put that on front.
Okay. Yeah, no, he qualifies. He decides to be a woman, he qualifies. No. Yes. Yes. Okay. Honorable thing.
Chair, I would like to propose the name of Tavi Nkosi. I have looked at the CV, and to me it looks very impressive and looks like a person that's got the necessary qualifications. And she's also a woman, so I think that is the kind of person that we are looking for, Chi.
Yes. And he's a young. The good part of this is woman and young. So we agree. With Retabile. Yes. And then Wandile Musovo.
Chair, I'm also convinced that Wandile Sihlobo is satisfactorily or properly qualified for this. Therefore, I move that he becomes the other candidate. Come again?
Two men, yeah, you are saying one delay should qualify. I'm saying let's look at the as we discuss one delay, we must deal with the one who Gary, so that we can know whom we take between who Gary and because we need two. I need to retire that we didn't have a contest.
What have done my part by being okay. The second one. Yeah.
All right, one delay.
I second the Honorable Kapa with a. One dealer.
Okay. Agreed with one dealer. These I will forward our nomination to Minister. But I think what is important, Albertino, because some of the people, they just write things that they don't have. They must get this thing. As we send the nomination, we must get those certificates that and whatever they claim to have, so that we are very sure that we've nominated to these two people. What should then happen is that those members that have submitted this CV must get these people to write the acceptance letter of accepting the nomination from us, and then we'll then forward them with that will be determining their qualification into the board. So that was the last item on the agenda, and we'll then actually get the report, and the Tina will take us through the report, and we adopt the report so that, because it's the final day, so that it can proceed to the where it's supposed to go. Albertine.
Thank you, Chair. The report that will go to the ATC to for the NA is going is read like this. Committee report, National Assembly report of the Portfolio Committee on Agriculture, Forest and Fisheries on the request to nominate candidates for appointment to the Board of the Land Bank dated the 5th, today's date, June 2018. The Portfolio Committee on Agriculture, Forest and Fisheries, having considered the request by the Minister of Finance to the National Assembly to nominate suitable candidates for appointment to the Board of the Land Bank, referred to it for consideration on the 16th of May 2018, CATC 16 May reports as follows. After deliberating on the 8th, 15 May and 5 June, the committee recommends in accordance with Section 4.2 of the Land and Agricultural Development Bank Act, Act No. 15 of 2002, to the Minister of Finance to nominate Ms. Retabile Nkosi and Mr. Wandile Sihlobo for appointment to the Board of the Land Bank. Report to be considered. Thank you. After deliberating on the 8th of and 15th of May, as well as on the 5th of June, the committee recommends, in accordance with Section 4.2 of the Land and Agricultural Development Bank Act, Act No. 15 of 2002, to the Minister of Finance to nominate Ms. Retabile Nkosi and Mr. Wandile Sihlobo for appointment to the Board of the Land Bank. For appointment to the Board of the Land Bank.
Can we get the move for the adoption? Honorable State? Or you want to? Can we get the correction?
No, it's just English which is confusing me. It says the committee recommends to the minister to nominate. The minister is not a nominee, he's an appointing person. So we recommend that he must appoint. Or we can say the committee nominates whoever, yeah.
I move that we adopt the report, Chair. Second,
I second that the report will be adopted.
Yes, thank you very much. The report is duly adopted. We've nominated, the committee has successfully nominated Retabile Nkosi and Sihlobo as our candidate to serve in Land Bank. And thank you very much, honorable members. That was the last item on the agenda. And you can enjoy your lunch and you stay in Parliament. See you on Thursday. Thank you very much.
Meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.